From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. A community garden has been such a success, they're now adding a food forest to the Pine Manor neighborhood. This is in addition to an on-site teaching kitchen, which shows people how to use the produce they've grown. The educational programs also prepare people to enter the workforce. We'll hear from one of the successful graduates and learn more about how the garden and food forest is transforming the neighborhood. Plus, capturing a photograph of an endangered animal that happens to also be mostly nocturnal is a challenge, to say the least. But news press photographer Andrew West stalked his photographic prey and walked away with the ultimate prize, incredible shots of a Florida panther in the wild. We'll talk with him about how he did it and how you can improve your wildlife photography skills. But first, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. A community garden nestled in the heart of Fort Myers' Pine Manor community has been such a success, both in feeding the neighborhood and lowering crime. Now the garden is growing bigger. A food forest is now being added. Culinary training classes are held next door to the garden using its produce, and graduates are going on to careers in commercial kitchens or home to their own kitchen with more skills and baskets of produce fresh from the garden. Response has been so great that the Pine Manor Improvement Association was able to buy a quarter acre of land next to the existing garden, and they've gotten a $6,000 grant to clear it. Next, a food forest will be planned and planted on that spot with the help of FGCU Food Forest President Arlo Simmons, who joins us in the studio today. Arlo, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also here today is Dorothy Browning from Goodwill, which is involved in the programming that happens at the community center next to the garden. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And we have Ashley Okerstrom, who attended culinary training at the Pine Manor Center and used that training to start a career in the kitchen. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
In her chef whites, too. We're talking about the new food forest going in at Pine Manor and learning more about the success stories coming out of its culinary training center. If you'd like to join the conversation or if you've seen a community garden at work, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. We're on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. For people who aren't familiar, Pine Manor is a little enclave within Fort Myers where 4,300 people live. A number of families there rely on food banks and food stamps to get by, and it's an area that was seeing inordinate amounts of crime back in 2011, burglaries and assaults. And then the Pine Manor Residents Association got the idea to invest in the community by creating a garden and the culinary program. Now, 5 years later, crime's been cut in half, according to Lee County's Sheriff's Office, and the garden is booming. Dorothy Okerstrom with the Goodwill, what changes have you seen over there in the community?
Well, definitely the crime statistics are less than half than what they were several years ago, Julie. And I think a lot of that is because of how the community has come around different projects, such as the community garden. It's the most obvious way people can get involved in the community and start talking to each other and really improve the community overall.
So why do you think that just the addition of a garden, did it all it take was a garden and a training program and people just kind of –
Wouldn't that
came
be nice?
Out around it?
Yeah, that would be nice. But no, I think one of the key factors are a couple of things. One is the board at Pine Manor. You have a lot of individuals on the board that are really integrated in the community that could help bring in community policing. Robin Gretz, the really head of the garden program, is amazing. She gives so much time and energy. And having resources like Arlo. You know, you can't do a project like this without someone with, a lot of expertise and somebody with the commitment that Arlo has shown over the last several years.
Well, and Arlo, I wanted to ask you, what is a food forest for people who don't know?
A food forest is a collection of edible, medicinal, useful plants in sort of in much the same way that ecosystems function around the world. So we're really just putting together plants that work well together, that create abundance and also generate a community. So we can create a space that's not only going to provide food, medicine, but also be able to create sense of place for people in a place like Pine Manor that doesn't have too much community pride. We can plant things that are very culturally appropriate to the individuals that live in Pine Manor and also, again, provide that abundance, take care of some of the food security issues in the community.
Yeah, and it seems like a forest, to me, in my little mind, I'm thinking sounds like it's a little bit lower maintenance than the full-on garden.
So that's the idea. And so really a food forest comes from the idea of permaculture, which is just all about utilizing all the resources you have available and, again, modeling a system after the way that nature functions out there in natural environments. So, again, you're going to be able to get away from a lot of the inputs that we see in conventional agriculture.
Yeah, so you're not going to try to put an apple tree in there?
No, we won't be putting any apple trees in there.
Because it doesn't work with our climate.
No, it does not. But a food forest also gives you room to kind of work around a microclimate. So we can actually start to grow more tropical-oriented things here. Even though we're in the subtropics, we can really push the edge a little bit by creating these dynamic systems.
Well, and it's been getting warmer and warmer, so
yes, it has
pretty tropical. Ashley Oakstrom, tell me about the training that you received when you went there to the class, and what have you gone on to do since then?
Okay, well, it was a 10-week program, and we basically went over knife skills, the difference between like braising, sautéing, and got to learn the five mother sauces and even sous vide, which is pretty neat.
Okay, so take me back. Five mother sauces. What are those?
There is espagnole sauce, bechamel.
I don't mean to pop quiz you.
Mornay. Also, did I say hollandaise?
Nope.
Bechamel.
Nope.
Mornay and
marinara. Is that one of them?
That's tomato sauce.
That's
yes,
my mother's
tomato
sauce.
And tomato sauce.
Marinara is my mother's sauce. So then, since you went to the class, and what have you done since then?
Well, 2 weeks before graduating, I got a job at Cork and Barrel, which is a tapas restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I worked there for about a year. And then also the culinary instructor, he hired me to be a sous chef of his catering company, which is Pyro's Creations in Naples. And right now I'm working at a restaurant on Fort Myers Beach, which is Jack's Farm to Fork at the Pink Shell Beach Resort and Marina. It's a fine dining restaurant using sustainable local food.
Well, that's kind of right in the same genre of the culinary training that you came from.
Right, right.
So what were you doing before you knew about this program?
Well, I was a nursing assistant for about 7 years, and I lost my job in November 2014. So I was unemployed for about 6 months. So I went down to the Pine Manor Community Center and tried to fill out an application for food stamps and try to find a job. And then I found about this culinary program. And I've always wanted to cook. It's been my passion. I love cooking. So I was really excited and I signed up.
Well, it seems like it was great. Right time, right
it
place.
It was perfect timing, yeah.
And then just completely retrained yourself.
Yeah.
Entered in a new career.
Yeah.
Dorothy, is this kind of program being replicated in other parts of Fort Myers?
There are some other programs. The Heights Foundation has had a similar program that we were both funded by the Southwest Florida Community Foundation in 2015 to start this program. Right now, I believe we're the only one doing it actively, but I think Heights is planning to do it again. You know, they've had a lot on their plates. It costs money, and so you know, we're always looking for grant funding to support it.
And this culinary program has kind of evolved, correct?
It
started
really
as a 12-week
mm-hmm.
thing?
Yeah, and that was great. I mean, you look at Ashley and what she learned and where she's taken it. 12 weeks was great, but the people were like Ashley. They were on food stamps. They had some pretty urgent needs financially. So in 2016, we did change a little bit. We went to a 3-week model and then a 1-week model for people that really just want to learn some of the very basics. But, you know, as you know, Julie, you can't really get a job unless you have some of the basics. So you need that serve-safe food handlers. It's nice if you know a little bit about knife management, a little bit of terminology. And so we can give them all that in a week. In 3 weeks, they get a little more on the preparation side, and so they have a little more skill set.
Serve-safe. Tell me about what is that? That's a test everybody has to take?
It is, so that you don't get poisoned when you go to the restaurant.
Everybody that works in a commercial kitchen has to have this.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's something that you work with people to get through in that 1 week program.
Yeah.
Then you have the 3 week program. It's a little bit longer.
There they get to do some cooking techniques. So they get the sautéing, the braising, not all that they got in a 12-week, obviously, but a pretty good amount. And it's incredible how much work you need on knife skills, right,
yes.
Ashley?
That's a lot of work.
So a lot of work on knife skills.
I'm kind of embarrassed about my knife skills.
Yeah.
Me and an onion. I mean, they're just so irregular. They're not right good cubes, but I'm not really good at the end. I've tried and tried and tried. But is there any plan to expand it or do any longer programs in the future?
We probably are going to stick with like the 3-week model at the most, you know, because there are programs at FMIC and at FGCU that people can get the more advanced degrees in. So we don't want to be that kind of program. We want to be something that helps people get that job. Or we also do a really cool program once a year at Pine Manor with teens. And the focus is really on helping them learn to cook healthy. And so we really like that program because you get people that maybe will think of something else to eat other than a chicken McNugget, right?
Yeah, well, you know, you're in a neighborhood where mm-hmm. fresh produce. I think it used to be kind of a food desert.
It is. It was a food desert. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and then these are, you just don't have that stuff around. So you might not know how to deal with it. So you do, aside from, you know, the job focused training, do you do the kind of classes there also for just people that want to know how to cook better at their house?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually IFAS is partnering with us. And so they're going to be able to do some of the educational side. And then we'll, people like Arlo, Arlo's actually a pretty good cook. we can pull stuff out of the garden and show them, hey, you know, here's pigeon peas and rice. And man, it really tastes good. And it's grown right here in your neighborhood.
We are talking about the Pine Manor Community Garden in Fort Myers and how it's had such a positive impact on the people living in that neighborhood. Now they're adding a food forest. Get in on this conversation by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Arlo, the food forest thing, you were talking a little bit about the climate, the microclimate, and things that are not only weather specific that makes sense with permaculture, but then also culture, and the people that live in that neighborhood. Can you tell me a little bit about how this food forest is maybe going to speak to the different cultures that are living there?
Sure. So things like cassava really jump out at me as being very important for different cultures around the world. In fact, close to 2-3 billion people around the world really rely on cassava, which is yuca, for those of you who might not know. So you've probably heard of it as tapioca. It's commonly used as a flour. But in many Latin American cultures, many African cultures, they actually eat the root. They turn it into bread. Or they, you know, fry it. You've probably heard of fried yuca before.
I've had yuca fries just last week with a hot avocado sauce at the Costa Rican place. Yes.
So those two things.
I'm familiar.
Avocados, yuca. I mean, just any number of things you could think of that people really recognize as being a part of their culture. And again, it creates that sense of place in a community that does not have much of an identity. The only identity it has is a really negative. You know, for example, I think people more often than not will call it Crime Manor, which I take offense to at this point because I'm in the community interacting with the community members on a really regular basis. And that's not what I see.
Yeah, and those numbers are down.
I see a lively community with, you know, awesome people who want to see change and want to be a part of that change in the community. So I'm really happy to be a part of that and, you know, do it around food, which means so much to me. And I know it does the community members as well.
Well, you know, and food is a large part of culture, and
absolutely,
a large part of community.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing people maybe share parts of their culture with one another. I think the breakdown there is mainly Hispanic, I think 70-something percent Hispanic, and then 22% African-American and Haitian, and then 2% white. So there's going to be a lot of different cultures that can contribute. It'd be great if they had a cookbook. I would pick that up.
We're working on that.
You are?
Yes. That's part of the grant we did last year. So we've had all the community members, not all of them, but some community members give recipes. And we're working with John Talmadge to kind of healthy them up. So we'll have the original version and maybe a healthy version. And we're going to come out with a cookbook next year.
Yeah. The one that doesn't have lard in it or all the bacon fat. You mentioned earlier, Arlo, permaculture.
Yes.
Tell me a little about that because I think that might be a new word for a lot of people.
Okay. Permaculture is a set of ethics and principles that were laid out by a man named Bill Mollison in the 70s. And he was an ecologist by trade. So really what he did is he took the idea of ecology and applied these principles and these ethics. So the ethics are people care, earth care, and fair share. And then the principles are things like observe and interact and obtain a yield. So they're complicated and they're also simple. But the principles are sort of like a guiding tool for you to interact with your food forest space. And then your ethics are something to keep in mind at all times. So whenever you're going to plant a food forest, you need to bear in mind, is it going to take care of people? So are you going to produce in abundance? Are you going to take care of the earth? So the way that you're producing the food, is it going to have a negative impact on the space that you're growing on, or is it going to have a beneficial impact? And then, of course, if we're creating such abundance, fair share. Let's create community around it.
Well, and that's been working out because people are taking home, I mean, just with the garden at this point so far, people are taking home produce and then they're then selling produce at the Alliance for the Arts Market.
Yeah, that's been something really amazing that I've seen recently that I did not expect at all. So we initially started producing a lot of produce for the culinary classes, but when they're not going on, of course, there's still vegetables growing. So I started taking them to market as sort of like a fundraising opportunity. And that was successful. But something that's happened recently that I did not expect again was that the community members were going to use it as an opportunity, sort of an entrepreneurial kind of initiative. So one of my favorite communities, Jeanette, brings her collard greens and her kale to market every week. And she's able to supplement her income. So she's on disability. She can't work. So she gets a set amount of money per month. But her expenses are always going up.
Expenses are going up everywhere all the
time. Exactly. So this allows her to supplement her income. And again, it gives her pride. She really enjoys doing it. So that was something I did not expect. It took me off guard. But it's really beautiful to see.
And you did marinara, right, Ashley?
Yes. I'm also at the market with them as well every weekend selling marinara made with fresh tomatoes.
Fresh tomato marinara. Yes. There's a difference.
It's phenomenal.
There is a difference.
You can tell the difference.
I like to do cherry tomatoes for my marinara sometimes. It makes it a little sweeter, especially with the cheese ravioli. Anyway, I digress. So how much space do you have to have a food forest?
Very small amount of space. So what I did when I first got to Pine Manor was, first of all, establish the organic no-till production area. And then I also took advantage of probably what's maybe a tenth of an acre, probably less, to provide an example of what we can do on a larger scale. So what we have there now is well over 10 different fruiting species, medicinal species, legumes. I mean, and just this little tenth of an acre – there is enormous abundance. So you really don't need much space at all. You can have a very small scale food forest, or you could have a very large scale food forest.
Well, now that you get to go larger scale, what are you excited to put in the ground?
Oh, lots of different stuff. Just lots of fruit trees. So I already have a plan set out. I put it together and submitted it to the board. And I did that with the help of my good friend Erica Clough, who owns her own landscaping business locally, Florida Edible Landscaping. Do a little plug for her. And it's all permaculture. So she does residential and commercial. She's an amazing woman. So she helped me out put together the design. So I'm looking forward to mainly fruit trees.
Well, and that's another question I wanted to ask. We're like in the land of gated communities and lawns. So is this something that you're hoping might catch on for? I mean, people like to garden too.
Well, so the thing is, and if you drive around Pine Manor, this isn't new information really. A lot of the people in these cultures that we've been talking about are very familiar with this, the idea of growing food for yourself. So if you walk, drive around Pine Manor, you'll see pigeon peas and mangoes and avocados and cassava. You'll see these things in people's yards. So it's already happening, but, happy to contribute.
People are already moving along with it. So, I mean, that's really pretty nice. Dorothy from Goodwill, what other programs are there happening at the center besides the culinary?
Oh, there's a lot of programs. We have a resident coordinator that's a Goodwill staff member but funded by the county, and she's really tasked with bringing in programs for the residents. So everything from after-school programs for the children to health programs, a lot of health screenings, HIV awareness, GED. We actually have a sewing class that goes on at Pine Manor. So a lot of different programs to get the residents the services they need, information beyond the walls of Pine Manor, because, you know, not only is it a food desert, but they have a bus system there, but transportation is also problematic for those individuals. So bringing services in is really important.
And then maybe helping with career stuff as far as resumes and filling out applications?
Mm-hmm. That is also one of our job link sites. Sherry Clark is the resident coordinator, and she also mans the job link section of it, and we have an assistant there. So people can come in, get help with a resume, get help with interviewing skills, have access to computers to do online job searches. That's one of the reasons we started the culinary program. You know, now your resumes get looked at by a computer usually versus a human. So we want to try to get something on people's resume that would at least get the computer to go, oh, let me kick this to a human. And so that ServSafe certificate is one thing that will help them get into the door for an interview.
For the kitchen kitchen stuff.
Yeah.
And then how important is the kitchen as a place for employment for people in this community? What other options are there?
We're hospitality oriented down here. So if you don't have anything on your resume, kitchens are a great place to start. They're also tend to be friendly towards individuals who might have something on their resume in the past, like an arrest, et cetera. But I think kitchens are being in the kitchen environment is hugely important. Do you think, Ashley, the atmosphere there at Pine Manor really helped you figure out what it was like to work in a kitchen?
Oh, definitely, because I didn't even know what I was doing in the beginning. Yeah. I mean, I've cooked at home for a long time, but I've never been in a professional setting.
And then, you know, maybe some advice for people that are thinking about it. What is the difference between cooking at home and then actually working in a professional setting?
Oh, my goodness. You have to put labels on everything. The dates. I mean, it's just totally different. Totally different. Everything's cooking high heat, fast in the kitchen.
And really working as a team. I think
yes,
that's one of the
really
valuable parts.
You have to be a great team player, mm-hmm. and everybody has to work together. And when you get stuck in the weeds and everything's crazy in the kitchen, everybody's got to come together and help each other.
Yeah, after yelling at each other, I've worked in kitchens. Yeah, that's is tense. I mean, it's really
tense. It can
tense.
Be really tense, yeah, but it's fun to me. I love it.
Yeah, when you're done and you've succeeded, you're done with the day and you get to just wash yeah. it all off and you've succeeded because you got through it.
Right.
It's amazing to see the people because we cap our classes at 10. So they start as 10 individuals, and they really are a team by the end. Even with the teens, I mean, they can put on an amazing buffet after a 3-week program and work like a team together. It's just really inspirational to see.
Yeah. So how does that work at the end of the deal? Do you have like a graduation ceremony, and then you said you had a buffet?
We have a graduation feast. Yeah. So we do a sit down dinner. So we have a very professional looking kitchen environment, and then the team works to put out a. 5-course meal, 3-course meal.
Three-course meal.
Mm-hmm. And this is like salmon. I mean, this is very nice stuff. This is not just a grab something fast food. So some people are in the kitchen prepping. Some people are doing serving. So it really is a team effort.
Yeah. Arlo, I want to shift back to you.
Okay.
I have a question. If somebody, say I'm sitting there and I've got like an acre of property and I've got a house that's taking up some room because, you know, you need to live, what do you suggest people put in their yard that can be a good producer, that can maybe be the first step towards their own personal food forest?
Chaya.
Chaya?
Yeah. I think absolutely everyone in Southwest Florida should be growing chaya.
The little seed things?
No, that's chia.
Okay.
Different things. So the plant that I'm talking about, I get all scientific on
obviously,
here.
Obviously, I'm completely lost. I'm like, it's not for me to class.
Yeah, so that's what we call a perennial vegetable. So there's a whole number of perennial vegetables, but if you just want me to narrow it down, chaya, I think everyone should try because, first of all, it's incredibly easy to grow. I mean, I hear people tell me all the time, oh, I have a black thumb. I can't grow anything, but you can grow chaya. I know that for a fact. So it's native to North America. And it grows really well in really hot, humid climates. So naturally here in Southwest Florida, we've got that covered. So you could put that in your yard and it'll start producing heavily for you and it'll be there for more than 10 years.
What am I looking for? Greens here or a potato?
Yeah, sorry. Greens. So they call it tree spinach
in
some parts of the world. So it's in a pretty attractive plant as well. So you can use it as edible landscaping.
Well, I have a couple pineapples out there. Maybe I can add to it.
And that's the other thing
is
it takes really well. It propagates very well.
Oh, great. So it'll spread?
It will not spread on its own like that, but it propagates very well from cuttings. So the thing about chaya is that you need to boil it before you eat it. You shouldn't eat it raw. And it might give you a stomach ache.
Okay.
But that's not an issue. You just boil it for about 5 to 10 minutes, and then you're left with something that you can substitute for anything you use spinach with. Absolutely anything.
It would be like a spinach stand-in.
Yeah, except the thing is it's far more nutrient dense and far easier to grow.
And then once you boil it,
more.
Would you then maybe want to saute it with – well, maybe let's ask the chef. Would you want to saute that maybe with some garlic and olive oil?
Well, yeah, definitely.
Well, for the teen program, we actually use the chaya in one of the dishes for a pasta dish. And we sauteed it with – we roasted some eggplant and sauteed – well, first boiled it, then mm-hmm. sauteed it up a little bit and tossed it in a pasta dish. And it was delicious. Everybody loved it.
We have a comment on Twitter, somebody asking, do you have to cook out toxins in chaya?
Yes.
So you said, well, you said you'd get some gastrointestinal distress if you didn't just, you know, put it in boiling water for 5 minutes.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. Well,
so I hear a lot of misinformation about the plant, and I think that's sort of a crime because it is so amazing and so easy to grow and could really do a lot for food insecure areas like Pine Manor. If everyone had a chaya plant in their yard.
And knew how to cook it right.
Yeah. It's, I mean, just an incredible nutrient source.
Yeah, I just learned something brand new. And I kind of thought I knew a little bit about gardening.
I mean,
and
so that's one perennial vegetable amongst hundreds that we can grow here in Southwest Florida, moringa being included. If you don't know anything about moringa, you should
moringa. I don't know that one either.
Moringa is a superfood. It's got all sorts of good stuff, vitamins, minerals, amino acids.
Is that another green?
It's pretty amazing, yes.
It's another green one. Okay.
I think she wants a vegetable out of you, Arlo. I think
I got to get more greens in my life. You know, you're right. I can't live on
Seminole pumpkin. There you go. That's
Seminole pumpkin.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, is that like a pumpkin?
So it's a native squash.
Mm-hmm.
So the Native Americans would have been consuming it. It gets pretty hard.
That's a hard one. So you got to kind of cook it down like a butternut squash maybe?
Yep. Exactly like that.
Okay. So those are some good tips. And then as far as a fruit tree maybe – what would be the number one fruit tree that you think people should get started with?
Oh, geez. There's the easy ones, mangoes and avocados. Those do really well here. But
well, who doesn't love a mango?
Exactly. But, you know, I think that it would be really cool to see more Annonas, so guanabana or soursop or sugar apples, custard apples, things like that. And again, just to relate it back to what we were talking about earlier, custard apples have a longstanding tradition in the Caribbean.
Oh, this is going to be culturally really also quite significant. Well, we have to leave it there for today. I'd like to thank our guests, Arlo Simmons with FGCU Food Forest and also now with Pine Manor Food Forest. Also, Dorothy Simmons with Goodwill and Ashley Oakstrom with Jack's Farm to Fork out on Fort Myers Beach. Thanks for coming in, all of you. Also, thanks to Andrew West from Fort Myers News Press for coming in and talking about photography with us. Be sure to check out his photos through the links at WGCUnews.org. And check out the nature shots our listeners posted on Instagram and Twitter using the hashtag GCL. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith and directed by Richard Chin Kui with technical help from A.J. Leonard. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. Tomorrow on Gulf Coast Live, it's a series of articles called Bias on the Bench, and it's the product of a year's worth of work from reporters at the Herald Tribune in Sarasota. They found racial bias among Florida judges, sentencing black convicts to harsher punishments and more time behind bars than white convicts. We'll talk with the reporters about that year-long project tomorrow. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1 WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.